Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. Thank you. And yourself?
Good. I very much like your background. I think it'd be nice if we're both doing this in a kind of background like that. But as we were discussing here and obviously with a bunch of clients, for a lot of people this was it's been a long week. The headline driven market is certainly continuing. So let's kind of dive right in. The thoughts around the Fed data, economic data that we've seen, market impact, what to expect from Fed speakers, and anything else. And I guess obviously any thoughts around the war, any geopolitical stuff. I also see any stuff on addressing the issues at the US airports. So I guess let's just dive right in, get your biggest views.
Sure. So this was a data light week, except for the PMIs. But as I keep saying, and that's what the data is showing, there is little correlation between PMIs and GDP. So those are more trading than economic events. And in about a half hour, we'll get consumer confidence, which is the most important data of the week, but let's face it, not the more important one. So the news really was about the war and how the Fed is reacting to it. So starting with the Fed reaction, we had a speech last night from Vice Chair Jefferson, and he still remains the proverbial double-handed economist. On the one hand, we have to worry about second-round effect from higher oil prices, so energy prices other than energy going up. On the other hand, this is going to impact higher oil prices, are also going to impact spending by consumer and businesses. So I would think it's less hawkish than other central bank, possibly because of the dual mandate, also possibly because of the intellectual tradition started by Bernanke. Bernanke in the late 1990s implicitly criticized the Fed response to the oil shocks of the 1980s. He argued that as long as inflation expectations were stable, there wasn't an automatic need to hike, that it depended on the reaction of core inflation, so on the existence of second-round effect, and most importantly, on where the economy was at when it got hit by the oil shock. In a 2004 speech, he said that if the economy was in a situation of rising unemployment and below target inflation, the central bank may conceivably have to ease in response to the shock. And I think the trick for the Fed is that right now, unemployment looks good, but other measures of the labor market, like for instance, the question asked to consumers in the surveys, actually they paint the picture of a much weaker labor market. And also, inflation is above the target. In my view, indicators like trimming inflation show that this inflation is still continuing. On the other hand, you have a supply shock in the form of cheap prices that are really surging due to AI demand. And there is a risk that if the war continues, we're going to have cheap shortages due to shortages of helium and natural gas. So it's a bit of a tricky situation. And so we can't fault Jefferson for hedging. This is exactly what I would do in his shoes. So this was in terms of policy, this was, you know, the main thing. Then we had the war news. So it looks to me that what we've seen this week is an administration trying to jawbone the markets and initially meeting with some success, but the jawboning is losing its effectiveness in terms of market impact because oil prices are still rising following the, you know, the last minute reprieve given to Iran. And the problem is when you keep, you know, making threats and then backing from this threat, you lose credibility. So the bottom line is that the longer the war goes on, the greater the economic risk because of the supply disruptions.
Yeah, interesting. I saw you put something this morning, or maybe late yesterday, about the impact from Trump saying we're going to make a deal, we're closing a deal, is slowly jawboning. You said the impact is slowly dissipating each time, and you know then it kind of goes back to the question also, where I think it's a growing possibility that maybe the administration is just stalling to get more resources into the region, which I think was not a common view probably on Monday, you know, when he was really kind of being clear that he wants to try and end the war now. We've done enough and we're moving on. And I guess, yeah, so the markets are reacting in that instance. What's interesting, like for today, it's more the longer dates yields that are going higher in kind of US and Europe, for example. I guess that's because central bankers freaked out a little bit with like four hikes priced in Bank of England. Or I guess the US has been a laggard, but like even a hike priced in is, you know, unlikely. And I guess they kind of poured cold water on that. And now some of that tension is not. Yeah, I guess in the longer date. Is that what's happening, you think?
Yeah, I think what is really key when we look at this war is to think in terms of capacity destruction and flow destruction. Because capacity is going to take longer to come back online, right? I was talking to Viresh, he was talking maybe 4 months to restore previous capacity. And the flows, you can turn the tap back on right away. So these are really the keys, because for central bankers, they are looking at two things, the duration and the intensity of the oil shock. So if we continue to have this kind of game between the American and the Iranians, and where there are all kinds of terrible threat exchange, but actually nothing happens. So no escalation basically means that there's no change in production and that the loss is mainly a flow loss that could be restored quite fast. So then the impact on growth, inflation, and monetary policy could be limited. But if we have escalation and the Iranians, and they seem fairly credible to me, is they make good on their threat to take out production, then we will have a long-lasting oil shock. And then policy response, I still think that 4 or 5 hikes is, I'm trying not to use a word that is too strong, but economies like Europe that are dependent on gas, which we are not, and we are energy self-sufficient, the Europeans,
especially on gas,
they are going to get decimated. And if on top of that, you have the central bank tightening like crazy, you're going to have the mother of recession. So I remain a bit skeptical. And, you know, the path of long-term rate, it's really going to depend on the damage in my view, on the damage that's done to all market, whether it's long term or short term.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that a lot of the markets are pretty highly correlated now too. Like front end rates, I'm saying. So Bank of England, ECB officials kind of coming out. Obviously, you said Fed is more just in kind of wait and see, but pouring cold water on it, that has kind of dampened down front end yield somewhat. What I thought was interesting about Varesh's comment, so obviously there's exactly what you were talking about, which is the idea of for a couple of months can really be negative impact, whether there's damage to kind of drilling field or processing or anything, any ports. But I think there's another point that I heard Varesh bring up, which I really liked, which is whether it's oil or gas, as an example, or even other commodities that are impacted or rely on energy, is places like Asia, for example, or even Europe, they may not go to the lowest cost producer anymore. They may actually start looking towards the more geopolitically safe, because a lot of times these are long-term contracts, and like
Sure.
for example with Qatar and natural gas, like that's a big deal, and that should push up prices as well, and that's like a long-term impact. So I think that's an interesting thing, and that would be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, there's obviously markets have short-term, focus always, but they can see through that, and if that narrative picks up. I haven't heard a lot of people outside of Rush talking about it, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
100%. And also, this would be, in a way, another form of destruction of supply in the sense that you move to a long term, more expensive. And what it means is that there is a loss of import of income for importing countries. And depending on where they are in terms of capacity pressure, like if they are in the Bernanke case, where there is already demand weaknesses and so on and so forth, so central bank won't have to stabilize. But if they are overheating and they move to these more expensive supplies, this is going to force the central bank to tighten. I mean, obviously, in the US, we don't have that problem, but yeah, this is super important.
Yeah, it's a great point, and the size of the disruption for now at least is so large, that there's just not enough. There's only so much oil to go around. The price can hit a certain amount, but the idea that we'll start seeing demand destruction, and once you see demand destruction, that can have a medium to longer term impact, just on kind of economies. That's a big deal, and people's behavior. Maybe people just stop flying less, or driving less, or think about other things. And once those decisions are made, I don't think people reverse them immediately. So it's a good point. Are you surprised by? I guess we talked about. Is there anything in the markets that's surprising you right now?
So I'm an economist, so my bias maybe is to be more on the slower, more conservative side, but I don't think markets are pricing the economic risk. I mean, if we have shortages of chips, countries don't have enough gas, natural LNG, this is a big deal. I mean, especially in Europe, that is more manufacturing oriented than we Americans are, and also more dependent on external demand than we are. So it looks to me that markets continue to see this largely as a price slash monetary policy shock. Though I'm looking at the flattening of the yield curve and starting to hear people worried about recession risk. So maybe that's shifting, and markets are going to sell off some more. But yeah, I'm surprised that they are not as worried as I am. But perhaps it's a natural state of affairs.
I understand what you're saying. So you, as an economist, you understand there's a lag, and so you expect things to happen slower. I mean, ironically, today, obviously, the curves are steepening again. But I just see UK 10-year is above 5% now. UK cannot, I mean, yeah, I mean, the idea that they can withstand these higher rates is going to be interesting. But okay, cool. Let's move on to next week. So, are there Fed speakers, or is there certain data that really stands out? Are there policy stuff, and also the stuff that Trump's trying to, I guess, interject on all the kind of chaos at the U.S. airports? Is that an issue? Is there any ramifications from that?
So it doesn't ri rise to the level of an economic issue. I mean, the broader political background here is a midterm, and as you know, the House, everybody agrees, it's likely to turn blue. The Senate is in the balance. From an economic policy perspective, I don't think this will make that much of a difference because I actually think that, even if the Democrats control the Senate, so they would have the opportunity of getting a budget through using reconciliations. That would be one of the key differences with controlling both House and Senate. But I don't see them adding to the deficit, and I don't see them more fiscally virtuous than the Republicans. So I think the difference is going to be more about politics than economics. So that's for the political picture. In terms of economics and in terms of this coming week, so two important pieces of data. The employment report on Friday. And of course, Sam will have his great model out a few days before. But it's interesting. The consensus shows no increase in unemployment, which is also what the Chicago Fed has a real-time forecast of the unemployment rate, and they see 2 basis point increase relative to last month. But because the 2 basis point increase is from 0.4 to 0.6, the rounded number could be slightly higher. But I'm being too detailed here. The bottom line is the consensus is no change in unemployment, slowdown in wage growth from 0.4 to 0.3%, and then headline NFP, which is the least significant number because of all the uncertainty around labor supply and immigration, around 50. So basically, no change, no impact from the war, which makes sense. Economic time is slow. The survey week is a week of the 12th, I believe. So not enough time to see anything from any impact from the war. And then the other piece of data that's important, it's a February retail sale, which is released a bit late. We still are not caught up from the impact of last year's government shutdown. It should have been released about 2 weeks ago. And there, the consensus is a bit pessimistic in the sense that they see 0.3 for the control group, which in real term is going to be about 0.1. So still weak consumption. So that's the data. In terms of Fed, so we have something which is not to be missed, which is Chair Powell answering questions from a first-year undergraduate econ class at Harvard. So this is, I think, Chair Powell, even though he said he will stay on until the lawsuit against him is dropped, I think he's building his legacy here. But anyway, he will probably slip in a few hints about policy. And then we have Williams and Moosonen. So Williams, New York Fed president, close to Powell, so we'll probably get more of a sense about on what Powell is thinking from Williams and from the first year of the graduates. And then we have Moosonen, who is one of the hawks, but also very much of an economic thinker, just like Paulson and Daly, who are also very much economic thinkers, but on the dovish side, and they are scheduled to speak later today. So that's about it for next week.
Okay. Anything else want to discuss or?
No, I mean, like everybody, I hope this work can end quickly and with limited damage to all the parties involved,
Right. Yes, we all
including
do.
markets.
Yeah, and I think most important, I think that's what we all hope for. And obviously anyone has any questions, we have this Iran war kind of daily, which looks at a whole bunch of different things, tanker traffic to CDS performing for the different countries involved, and gotten really good feedback. So make sure that you guys are kind of reading that stuff.
Definitely, this is my go-to piece every morning.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And also, we are looking at, trying to look at different kind of factor model based analysis. So if we do see oil at $150 as an example, what are the most interesting or undervalued trades? So we have a bunch of thoughts around that. So please, people, please reach out to myself or Dominique or anyone around that stuff. And then also, we are thinking about if the Fed still does end up cutting, say your call is right now, that's right.
It's two before war impact. I'm going
Right.
to have this week, I'm thinking of publishing scenarios of the war on the loss of
That would be
capacity
awesome.
and flow
Yep.
and linking it to Fed policy.
That'd be fantastic. So, okay, cool. Well, with that, wish you a lovely weekend hiking in the beautiful mountains. Well, I have my blurred background. Blurred background here. But it should be all good, and wishing everyone a very nice weekend.
Yeah, good luck, everybody.